As you walk along Tanglewood's meandering paths, it's easy to miss a series of small wooden sheds nestled amongst the pine trees until you hear this beautiful music emanating from within.
And here is the Tanglewood Music Center Fellows' home, and it's where they hone their crafts and learn from their masters.
For decades, talented young musicians from around the country and around the globe have been coming to the Berkshires to study with some of the best musicians in the world.
And today we're joined by one of our best friends and best counselors, I may say, at Camp Tanglewood, the director of the Tanglewood Music Center, Ellen. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here, as always.
Ellen, thank you very much for being with us. We love having you here. We were just talking briefly before the break, and you said something to me that resonated, which is that something you refer to as Tanglewood time. So where it seems like a very long time because you've been doing so much and you've been in a whirlwind, but you've been here for a few weeks, three or four weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You get a lot done.
You really do. It is a very bizarre phenomenon where you come here and a day lasts forever. You can barely, at 5 o'clock, remember what 6 a.m. was like. It just, and you were up. I mean, I'm not implying that I was oversleeping. But, you know, these days are incredibly long, and each week seems to involve as much learning and as much experience as you might have anyplace else in about 6 or 8 weeks. However, when you get to the end of the summer, it passes in about a minute.
Yeah. Do you offer, Ellen Heistein, do you offer calisthenics for the campers at all?
there are some yoga sessions at Miss Hall School where they stay, and there are various other things we try and do. I myself walk up the hill I live on and walk down the hill, and that's pretty much what I have time for.
That's enough, right?
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Well,
that's,
you know,
what I can do.
A point was made earlier today that I thought was really very important, and that is, you think of, I have somewhat jokingly, but not really, referred to your orchestra here as the second best in the country. And so because they're phenomenal musicians and you do a great selection process. But I was impressed by the fact that they don't know each other. They walk in here cold and they become this terrific orchestra.
It is sort of a miracle, isn't it? There are reasons for that, of course. I mean, none of them are completely inexperienced at being an orchestra, so it's not like they're coming in cold.
Sure.
On the other hand, you're right, they don't know each other, and our first job, once we get here, is to get them to know each other. So we do projects to open the season for us that are not public, but they culminate in a public experience as what we would call choirs. In other words, we do a big brass extravaganza concert. The brass guys get to know each other. And by the way, that's guys in the general sense, guys and gals.
We got it. You can say it, I couldn't.
Yes, I know it's not correct, but oh well. Anyway, they do bond. They form a sound together in a week of very intensive work together. String players all participate in a string quartet seminar. So that by the time they actually sit down in the orchestra, they have a good sense of each other. They have a sense of how to make one voice out of 4, out of 10, out of 20, out of hopefully eventually 100. And the conductors, whoever works with them, and this year we're lucky enough it's Andres Nelsons, who opens the first concert, is usually astonished by the degree to which they are melded as a single unit right from the get-go.
So how does that work? I know that you're very impressed with Andres Nelson.
Yeah, we are all very impressed.
And the fact that he's able to do this.
And play the trumpet, as he
And play the trumpet, as we pointed out. But he's really, tell us what that interaction is like when he teaches.
Andres is an extraordinarily inspiring guy. He's, part of it, I think, is his youth and his idealism. Part of it is his conducting technique, which was very interesting to watch in a conducting class he did the other day, because it's so seemingly effortless, but so absolutely on point, that when he does something gesturally or with his facial expression or with some kind of body language, it instantly is reflected in the orchestra. I mean, instantly. And that's very rare. He doesn't have to do much talking.
Can you give us an example of that?
Yes, I'm thinking of the last piece he conducted on the brass concert, where the very last note, he had a gesture where he had his arms outstretched and his hands outstretched to hold the note, but then one arm went up into the heavens and released the note literally by opening hand.
Yeah.
And imagine if you were singing. What do you do if you saw that? And that's how the brass players played. In other words, the note just moved off into the stratosphere or whatever, yeah, and then disappeared out there. And that's the kind of thing he can do very effortlessly and communicates both interestingly to the ensemble and never gets in their way, but also communicates to the audience who's watching, which is why people love to watch him so much.
Just like the feather at the end of Forrest Gump.
I don't remember the
just end. Like that.
Goes up in the air and just floats away.
If you say so.
So, and at what point does an artist like that come onto your radar and the radar of the music world?
An artist like Andres?
Andres, yes.
I don't know. That's a great question for Mark and Tony and the other people who are on the committee who chose him as music director. Yeah. I'm just grateful that they did. But, this is a prodigy, and he was recognized, after all, very, very early on. And he's still under 40, and he is acknowledged as one of the really great conductors of the world. How often does that happen?
It happened
with Bernstein, we know that.
Yeah.
So we have something of a history of tapping into the young talent.
So... you can make the easy joke that the Tiger Woods Music Center has gone to the birds. So tell us, but I won't make that joke. So tell us about the connection that you all have now with the Mass Audubon Society.
Yeah, actually, Joe and I were talking about this before because I thought this was a particularly interesting one maybe for your audience. There's a wonderful French pianist by the name of Pierre-Laurent Desmarre, and both Tony Fogg and I count him as a great friend. He's doing a project that involves a piece by the French composer Olivier Messiaen, which is called the Catalogue des Oiseaux.
Oh.
And it's about, I would
Thank
say...
Thank God we don't have to say any of this,
oh,
Alan.
Oh, boy.
It's about 4 or 5 hours worth of pieces that reflect and, to some degree, transcribe actual birdsong. And they're amazing pieces. Okay, and we heard that he was doing this around the world, and it occurred to us that since we have a branch of the Mass Audubon Society, Pleasant Valley Wildlife Refuge,
mm-hmm,
just 2 miles up the road here from Tanglewood, and have never collaborated with them, wouldn't it be fun to have some of these pieces played over there, but also to have maybe Pierre-Laurent play a few of those pieces early in the morning at the Wildlife Refuge, and it's going to be 7 in the morning, sorry about that, but that's when the birds get up. And then 2 more days after that, and we're talking about July 27, 28, and 29, when TMC fellows, piano fellows, whom we're able to showcase this way, will also play selections from Catalogue des Oiseaux on these early morning concerts. And then on the 28th itself, there'll be other programs which aren't TMC, but which will be interesting programs on the grounds, which will be both with ornithologists from the Audubon Society, which will involve performance at the end of the day, discussions about birds.
How do people get into this, get on to this?
You have to actually, to get to the morning recital, and there are bird walks associated with that through Pleasant Valley, you actually have to register on the Audubon Society website. Mass Audubon Society website.
Now, do we know how the birds react to the music?
I was going to say the same thing.
Well, you know, all of us have been at concerts at Tanglewood where the birds wouldn't shut up, which was wonderful as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
But the most dramatic example I've ever heard, and you guys, I may have been there, was when Renee Fleming sang the Strauss 4 Last Songs. Was that last year or the year before? I get confused.
Me too.
Anyway, it was recent.
Yes.
In the shed, and she had a bird singing along with her, and the bird was gradually matching pitch so that at the very end, with her last note, the pitch was the same, and it was one of the most extraordinary experiences I've ever had.
Did she notice it?
I can't imagine she didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty fabulous.
Now
but no, birds like that. They sing
do.
Along.
You know, if you want to be upstaged by a bird, though.
If I was going to be upstaged by anybody, I would
let it be a bird.
I would make it be a bird.
now, obviously.
They're unlikely to take income away or anything.
Well, that's true. That's right. They're not going to be
obviously, and really quickly, Obviously, we know from our home that there's call and response from birds. Mm. So if a cardinal, you know, a lady cardinal or a man cardinal sings to each other, then there's going to be a response to that. Do you hear that from the music?
In I think words, you sometimes you know, do. You know, this is going way beyond my expertise, but I am a very, very bad amateur birder. And I do also notice what you've noticed, which is that call and response. And yeah, if you sing, they will sing back. Usually.
So if the orchestra, if the flute plays a little thing and the cardinal comes back to that, that might be a reason for not doing it, for not having the flute. Because
okay, you can talk to the composers about that, Alan. I don't know.
Sorry, I'm trying to figure out what you were implying.
Sorry about that, Joe.
No, I was just, I'm curious as to, meaning it, well, never mind. Okay. I'll ask you during the break. Yeah. Do you come in each year with a new mission of, okay, this year is going to be the year of,
We actually do. I mean, there are big things that kind of inform the way we fill in the schedule, and this year, for example, we're lucky enough to have Andres with us twice. It's a big deal for us. He's opening our season with the first orchestra concert. He's closing our season with the Strauss Alpine Symphony, talking about nature pieces in the shed on August 20th. And he's doing things like conducting and playing in on that big brass extravaganza. Mm-hmm. So that kind of informed a whole lot of what we did. The vocal program this year is a big part of that, and I don't want to steal my beautiful colleague Dawn Upshaw's thunder by talking about this too early, but the fact that the singers begin their season with a tribute to Ella Fitzgerald and the American Songbook and end the season with Bach cantatas, that's a traversal and a journey, isn't it? So those kinds of linchpin activities very much inform what happens around them.
So and we'll talk to her about this, but I want to talk to you. Let's talk about her before we talk to her, which is...
Do we have many, many hours? Because talking about Dawn is...
But the fact that have Dawn Upshaw as the head of the vocal arts program at the TMC speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It sure does to me. Well, of course, Dawn was a fellow herself, so yes. She has a great understanding of what a summer program like this, I think, can accomplish in one's life and can mean to one. But she is such, I often say to our students that our faculty should embody what I think of as heroes, that every field needs its heroes. Sure. That you look at and you say, oh yeah, that's how I want to be, that's what I want to make my life like. And if there's anybody who does that more than Dawn, I don't know them.
And speaking of which, we should take just a second to memorialize Phyllis Curtin, who has departed.
Who was the great Phyllis Curtin. And of course, we miss her terribly, and she was Dawn's teacher when she was here. So we're trying to keep the baton moving from generation to generation. And Phyllis had a wonderful, rich, marvelous life and did so much for us.
I think, Joe, just one little mini question, and that is, when you come in from the Maple Lot, you see the little rehearsal rooms, and you wonder, what are those used for?
Rehearsing?
Oh, okay.
Practicing?
Anything
People
else?
People do have to practice.
Yeah, okay.
Anything. I know what you're implying, Alan, and I absolutely don't know. Mm. I do not go into those rooms. They are sacred. The students use them for whatever they need to use them for.
The Tanglewood Music Center Fellows will be performing throughout the summer. For a full schedule, you can visit tanglewood.org, tanglewood.org. Alan Highseed, it's always a pleasure to have you with us, and we look forward to seeing you in a few weeks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.